Hi, this is Tom from The Happiness Quotient. Thank you for clicking on this episode. If you've chosen to listen to some of my first episodes, 60 or so, they were created before I changed the name to The Happiness Quotient. Don't be confused if you hear my voice welcoming you to Baker Street with Tom Pollard, or if you hear me referencing my YouTube channel, Everest Mystery, you're still in the right place. Until I'm a big star and can hire an editor and producer to change every episode to reflect the platform, my gut tells me you'll be okay with hearing Baker Street or Everest Mystery when you click on an episode to The Happiness Quotient. It's all me. So let's just consider us one big happy family where we all learn together, brought here by our common interests and our desire to create a better world, one episode at a time. I love you. Thank you. Now to the episode. This is The Happiness Quotient. For a free PDF download of A Course in Happiness, go to patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, where you'll find a beautiful, colorful new issue. Print it out, share it, post it on your refrigerator. Everybody who participates gets an A+. Hey, and that ain't bad.
All of my wisdom came from all the toughest days. I never learned a thing being happy. All of my suffering came, I didn't appreciate it. I never learned a thing being happy. To know how it feels now and then, I got a Happiness Jones, my friend. A Happiness Jones.
Welcome to The Happiness Quotient. I'm Tom Pollard. Starting sometime about a year ago, I went back to the drawing board on the book that I'm writing. My good friend Mark Sinnott, New York Times best-selling author, my partner on the 2019 Sandy Irvin search expedition on Mount Everest, and guest on this podcast, Mark gave me some valuable feedback after reviewing a few samples of my work in progress. And I want to note here that my work in progress is a memoir, not only about my experiences on historic expeditions that I took on Mount Everest, but life experiences that slapped me around, kicked me in the gut, forced me to realize that for me at least, life is defined by how one reacts to the experiences he or she encounters. How we can't always control what happens. Life sometimes takes the steering wheel out of our hands and brings us to places that we did not expect. And we can only endeavor to, at least, control how we react. That's all. Anyway, Mark suggested that in order to kind of get my chops, I should read as many memoirs as I could get my hands on. And I will share the reading list of some of my suggestions in the liner notes of this episode. One of the books that I read was Surviving the Holocaust by a remarkable and wonderful woman, Irene Butter, whose book is called Shores Beyond Shores, From Holocaust to Hope. Another, Reading Claudius by Caroline Heller, an incredible memoir, actually a dual memoir written about her parents in pre-war Central Europe during the rise of the Nazis, and then of her own upbringing. And then possibly my favorite memoir that I've read so far is a book many might be familiar with, Wild by Cheryl Strayed, From Lost to Found on the Pacific Crest Trail. It was turned into a really very awesome movie starring Reese Witherspoon, and the memoir describes Cheryl Strayed's hike on the Pacific Crest Trail back in 1995. It's a journey of self-discovery. The sensitivity and insight of each of these memoirs gave me a lot of insight into what Mark had told me to do when writing. He said, show me, don't tell me. something about the book Wild moved me. The Pacific Crest Trail has been on my mind ever since. And even though Cheryl Strayed is a woman, obviously, it's as if I could really viscerally understand what it was she was going through, what she was feeling. So last week, serendipitously, surprisingly, but not surprisingly, there are no mistakes. I'm on YouTube looking for a guitar lesson, and up on my screen is a suggestion for a video called To Measure a Mile. It's an hour plus documentary, or actually a personal journal, of this guy's hike on the Pacific Crest Trail. I know there are a lot of really bad personal journal videos out there, and lots of them are absolute crap. So with some hesitation, I clicked, and I was immediately hooked from the very first sound.
I think it's the reminiscence of journeys that paints them with so much beauty. It's that constant story playing in your mind, drawing you back to the thousands of miles, the millions of memories and images. They all come crashing around you at the end of a journey like this. A 2,650-mile pilgrimage that brought us from the blistering desert all the way to this.
Within the span of the first 15 minutes of this video, I'd already reached out to the guy who filmed it and narrated it, Chris Carter. I told him I wanted him on the happiness quotient.
The ultimate finish line. But now that we're here, we don't want it to be over. These crashing memories remind us how euphoric these months were.
Not many more minutes later, before I was even halfway through with the film, he texted back and said, absolutely.
But all good things inevitably end. And this day is the closure we may dread, but undoubtedly need.
Go figure, the PCT, the same place Cheryl Strayed walked in her memoir. I watched Chris's video and remembered scenes in that book and thought, wow, she described it so perfectly. It's just as beautiful and mysterious as I had thought when I was reading the book. She had actually showed me, not told me. Sinnott was right. Today, I have Chris Carter here to share with me about his incredibly moving, insightful personal journal about his 2018 thru-hike of the Pacific Crest Trail.
Out of nowhere, shin splints had flared up just as we reached the first Sierra peaks, forcing Ike to slow down and eventually stop completely due to the pain. It was devastating, as we had so looked forward to the relief the Sierras would bring, and it felt completely unfair to be charging ahead without him.
Before I introduce you to the awesome Chris Carter, I want to let you know that he started off this expedition with two of his buddies, a guy named Bo and Ike. And, well, if Cheryl Strayed gets Reese Witherspoon to play her in the film Wild, Ike would probably be Brad Pitt. Chris might be Chris Pratt or something, and Bo, I don't know, some other movie star. Bo, it's your pick. All right, back to reality. Here's my conversation with the ever-engaging Chris Carter, a.k.a. Chris Pratt, from his home in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he is studying for his degree in divinity. Be it known that Chris grew up in Kenya, the son of missionaries, deeply impressed by the Maasai, known for their endurance.
In the adversity and grind, we were taught endurance. In the long, cold days, we were taught patience. In the monotony and weariness, we were taught fortitude. And above it all, we were shown our limits, and that often we could surpass them. When all is stripped away from you and you live life in the rawest sense, armed with only your perseverance, you realize what you're made of. It's like a long, dirty classroom of life, with the most genuine of hiker trash as your classmates, and the world as your teacher. There's no structure. You decide if you want to do it, and you decide if you want to quit. Nothing is stopping you, and you don't really even know why you're doing it.
To Measure a Mile, a journey along the Pacific Crest Trail, Chris Carter, I didn't even know about you until about 24 hours ago. I'm honored to have the opportunity to speak with you and have you tell me about an incredible journey that people take, that it's, you know, that hundreds, if not thousands over the years have maybe taken it. But your film was truly inspiring. And I'm so happy to have you on the Happiness Quotient podcast. You're the perfect fit for it.
Tom, I really appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, so let's go back a little bit. Just you obviously are an athlete. You I think in your Instagram profile it says ultra runner. You really like the challenge of a difficult physical journey. And those people typically are ones who know the spiritual and mental element to it. So give me a short synopsis of your background and how on earth did you come up with this idea to hike the Pacific Crest Trail?
Ah, man, that's an awesome question. It really, I guess, started from my background growing up in Kenya. My mom and dad were missionaries in Kenya, East Africa. So we moved there when I was a really young kid. Don't really remember much about America before that, but pretty much all my early memories are growing up in Africa. And you've done a lot of traveling yourself, and you know that just in that area, people are just wild. They just have this sense of adventure about them. And I think growing up in that context gave me this passion, this desire for not only adventure, but to test my body, to push my body to the limits. And we lived really close to the Maasai people, which are very good runners and very influenced by just their passion and their desire for running and ultra running, and had a lot of influence in my life from early on, and really started getting into ultra running there in Kenya, but wasn't really able to compete until I came to the States. And currently living in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where there's an awesome race scene, awesome outdoor scene, and just kind of fell fully in love with ultra running and racing and the race atmosphere, the running community. In addition to that, I'm a rock climber also here in Chattanooga, really stoked on that. And that was just really cool to be able to kind of merge those two things on my journey of the Pacific Crest Trail, because it just travels through so many world-class climbing destinations. When I started out, I wanted it to kind of be this fusion of a climbing trip and an endurance trip, kind of blending my two passions, and it really become that. Learned about the Pacific Crest Trail, honestly, on the John Muir Trail. I didn't really know much about it, and I was working, doing an internship out in Tanzania, and one of my buddies was like, look, man, when you come back, we're hiking the John Muir Trail, which is a section in the Sierra Nevada range, about 270 miles, or 250, depending where you start. And he was like, you should totally come out. So I flew out from Tanzania. He picked me up at the airport. We freaking went all the way out to California and got on the John Muir Trail. And I went from like absolute desert living with the Maasai people to Mount Whitney in like 2 days. It was nuts, man. And I was just absolutely blown away. Had no idea such beauty existed in America. And I just remember seeing a thru hiker at one point hiking the PCT and asking him, dude, where are you coming from? He's like, man, I just freaking walked from Mexico. I was like, no way. I got so stoked. And at that point, I just remember being like, I'm gonna hike this trail, come hell or high water. So yeah, that's kind of where it started. And, you know, praise the Lord, I had the opportunity to do it.
And you nailed on something really right, the bond that's created by friends that is forged in very often in the hardships, in the most difficult times. And the Pacific Crest Trail being 2,650 miles, you start in literally in the desert and you go up into the mountains, you end in the snow after, you know, four or five months, at least drawn out. I can only imagine that the bonds that you create on that are so strong, but physically, at least, I bet you couldn't have even dreamed of how difficult this was on your body.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think I mentioned it in the film, but we started off a little too ambitious. I'm an ultra runner. Bo is super fit. He ran as well. And Ike is just kind of a natural Spartan. So we started pretty fast and quickly realized, like, man, this trail is brutal. And, you know, I was just coming off of ultra running season. So I think I'd run like a 50-mile race soon before I got on the trip. And I was like, man, this is going to be chill. Like, feel pretty ready and been training my body for it and think I'm going to be all right. But I don't think anything can really prepare you for the constant grind of hiking 30, 35 miles every single day, what that has on your body, and then also carrying all that stuff on your back. It's you really, there's no way to train for that except to jump into the thru hiking lifestyle, which it kicks your butt right off the bat. You know, you start, like you said, you start in the desert first day. It was blistering hot. We started really late in the season, May 19th. So most people start a little earlier. And first of all, maybe I should just give a quick synopsis on what the PCT is.
Sure. Or yeah.
Really know it. But what it is, it's a, like you said, it's a 2,650 mile wilderness footpath, runs from California up through Oregon into Washington, closely aligns and follows the Sierra Nevada and the Cascade Mountain ranges of the West Coast. So really diverse, ranges from arid, dry desert to Pacific temperate rainforest up in the PNW, up in Oregon and Washington. Lots of changes in elevation too. It runs just by Death Valley, lowest point in the States, to highest point on Mount Whitney soon after. So you get just some crazy contrast. The highest point actually on the trail is Forrester Pass at 13,000 feet, but Mount Whitney hits 14,500. So you're hitting the top of the world there as far as America goes. You know, obviously you've been quite a deal higher, but for me, that was something else. I was pretty stoked on that. And yeah, I mean, it's just it's an incredible experience. It's something that growing up in Kenya, I dreamed of. You know, the wilderness and the landscapes of Africa are beautiful, but America has done a really good job of separating and segregating these lands for special use and protecting them and giving them to the people to use as recreation. And for me, coming from Africa, that was euphoric. I was so excited because I developed this passion for adventure and exploration in Africa, but oftentimes it was very difficult, especially as a white person growing up there, even though I speak Swahili and I know the culture and I'm still very different from them and I'm gonna always stick out. And so traveling was sometimes quite a burden, but I think when I came here to the States, just the adventure community, I really clicked with as this, like, I don't know, it's something that I didn't really experience a lot of culture shock with. And when I came from Kenya first, coming to the States, I was really struggling to kind of find my place here in America. As missionary kids, we're sometimes called hidden immigrants because we really feel like our connection is in Africa, but we look American. And so when we come here, people don't expect us not to know what a hashtag is or how to order at Subway or all these things that everyone should know how to do. And making friends is sometimes quite tricky, quite difficult. And for me, when I came here, I really found the outdoors community to be super welcoming, super open, and I just really clicked with them. So yeah, very thankful for that. But yeah, sorry, kind of a tangent, but that's basically what the PCT is.
So the film, there's a lot of goosebump moments in the film for me. Did you know you were going to produce a film out of this, or did you just have a video camera with you and say, I'll get some cool shots and look at it, show my grandkids someday?
Yeah, it definitely started out as that. I really didn't have the notion to produce any sort of film when I was starting out. I bought this Sony A6000 when I was in college, started faffing around with it and learning how to use it, and started off the trip really just documenting just the special moments that I saw, the moments with Ike and Bo, and started kind of on trail learning how to really capture the story on film. And I'd love to dig into this a little more with you, being inspired by your films and the way you tell stories. I really resonate with it because you do a great job of maintaining the essence of an adventure and the essence of why we journey while documenting the film, which is one thing that I really wanted to portray through the film. One thing that I was scared of kind of entering into the space of filming a journey is I wanted to preserve why we actually go on adventures. And so as I started going through the desert, and I was really blown away by just the story of it all and kind of the allegory of my life and that I was experiencing on the trail. It's really this timeline of kind of start with this. You start as almost this baby, you know, you don't really know what you're getting yourself into. And as you go through the trail, you learn so much so fast. I mean, in that first month, Ike and I, we felt like we went to, you know, college for the outdoors, just learning things every single day, how to live in this environment constantly, how to be nomads, how to resupply, how to deal with other people, and then how to constantly say hello and say goodbye to people. As you're moving through these towns and villages and you're meeting incredible people, but you're not forming deep relationships. You're just saying hi and saying bye. And it's a hard thing of life. And for me, it started feeling like this kind of allegory of life that was sped up really fast. And that's really what convinced me to start making the film, is I wanted to showcase that, because I wasn't expecting it. I didn't really know what I was going to feel on the trip, but that really started coming to my mind. And I said, man, if I can capture this, then I'd be really excited. And I'd love to show my grandkids this journey, and I'd love to share it with my friends. But never did I really think I was going to make a film to kind of put out to the world. Something that kind of came afterwards, as I got further down the road into the trail and started thinking more about the narrative style of it and taking a little more creative shots and stuff. But I really wanted to maintain that intimate part of it.
Yeah, you did it. Well, one of the early thoughts I had was like, wow, either he's just lucky, or they're walking a lot at the beginning or the very end of the day, because there was all these golden hour shots when the sun is really low on the horizon and people are either in silhouette or bathed in this beautiful orangey light. And then, as it turns out, about halfway through the film, you connect with a couple of other hikers, and you decide to do a lot of your hiking in the cooler hours and sleeping under whatever shade you could find during the day. And I was like, boom, nailed it. You know, along the way in that, now it's an hour and 15 minutes long. It goes really fast for me. You very, very gracefully move into these areas, just as you had said, this allegory. You talk about conquering doubts and how you're constantly on the move. And those are some words and little sayings that pop up. But you were never lacking the courage you needed, or the oomph, if you will. And it seems like the other people charged you up when you're down. They call them trail angels. And, you know, so what about these trail angels? And tell me a little bit about them. You met at least two of them I saw in the film. And what's a trail angel, and how did they help you?
Yeah, so trail angels are anyone that lives kind of maybe close or near the trail, that they've become accustomed to hikers coming through the area, and they just kind of start helping out hikers as we come through. And I mean, really in the desert, they become very important, because there's a lot of stretches between water sources where it's sometimes 40, 50 miles. And sometimes they'll break up those stretches by putting water caches out on trailheads and stuff for us to refill our water bottles as we're going. And it becomes very important there in the desert. And then once we get more into the Sierras and NorCal and everything, then they become more of this just support system, where you'll show up at a trailhead and they'll have this tent and they're grilling, you know, burgers and hot dogs, and oh, it just gets you so stoked. And it really is this beautiful element of the trail that is, you can really only experience by getting out there, is A, the community, B, the community you're walking through. Just the people that you see as trail angels, the people that give you hitchhikes into town. I mean, people, they just come around you and they support you and they help you. And one thing that I really struggled with coming to the States was I came from a collectivist culture in Africa, where everyone kind of looks after each other. And America is a very individualistic culture. It just isn't bad in its own sense. It's just a different culture, but it's something that I kind of had a little friction with. And on trail, man, you depend entirely on what we call your trail family, which are people that you kind of run into along the way, or that you start the trail with. And C, you depend on the people, or B, you depend on the people that you run into, the trail angels and people in towns. And man, I was just blown away by the generosity. I mean, the two examples I gave in the film were just, I couldn't pick out from all the wives, countless experiences. And I had so much footage of these beautiful people that were helping us out.
After about a week of 10-mile days, we began to up the mileage. But as the days rolled on, it became increasingly clear that Bo wasn't healing like we wanted.
I said that I would write you.
He pushed until he literally couldn't go any further, and then made the difficult decision to go ahead and take some time off trail and let his legs heal up. In a stroke of luck, we connected with a family off trail who had been following our journey on Facebook, and they offered to take us in for a few days and help Bo out with his injuries.
Yeah. Nope, not happening. Hey.
Okay. We pulled a quick hitch off trail and soon found ourselves treated with some of the first trail magic of the trip.
Oh, shoot.
We are stuffing our faces.
We had just said bye to Bo, which was really rough. When you are so invested in it and when you have committed the time to get out there and hike this thing, and then you're pulled out of it by an injury. I mean, it just rips your soul apart. It's so difficult. It's not just the physical sacrifice. It's what you have to say no to go on these trips. They take 5 to 6 months sometimes, and you have to put your life on hold. Maybe say no to relationships, maybe say goodbye to relationships, change your whole kind of mindset to do this thing. And it's very easy to get an injury and to have to pull out. And I think that's one of the hardest things about the trail is managing injuries. And so Bo, he was, like I said, he was a runner. He had developed some stuff beforehand that kind of came back and resurfaced during the trip. There was also some issues with blisters and just stuff that we couldn't really deal with. And unfortunately, he had to pull out pretty early on. And man, I mean, for him, gut-wrenching. Also for us, just so difficult, you know? So from both sides of perspective, I think so really because of that, we were in such a low point and then we got so injured ourselves. I got shin splints. Ike got some really bad blood blisters on his feet. And I mean, we thought we might have to pull from the trail ourselves. So we were posted up under this bridge with this train driving past us every hour. Like we were there for a couple of days, like trying to get sleep. Like it was so heinous and just injured and like so low. And I had posted on Facebook, this Trail Angel Facebook page about it and just said, hey, totally get it if you can't, but like a couple of us are just posted up under this bridge and been here for a while. We would love some help, any help you can.
We were getting pretty discouraged as we knew that every day we fell behind was one more day we had to make up in order to beat the snow in Washington. But then something incredible happened.
Well, Trail Angels have come in clutch again. We got Paula!
Just when we were at our lowest, an incredible Trail Angel named Paula heard about our injuries and came and snatched us from under the bridge, taking us all the way to her beautiful house in Palm Springs.
Man, I was in tears. Like, just the humanity and the society there is just, it's beautiful. It's something that I hadn't really experienced since being in America. And I think it was this moment of realization of like, there is this essence of every person that wants to help other people and that wants to be in connection with other people. And it doesn't matter what culture you're in, because I've seen it now in American culture and African culture, there's this desire to help other people that just became so evident to me during those months on trail.
Wow, that's really beautiful, you know? And you go out on this trail and people who have never seen or heard from you, they're suddenly, you have your own bedroom, a stocked refrigerator, you're sitting by her swimming pool, and this dog is on Ike's lap as he sips a Corona. I'm dying laughing, thinking, oh my gosh, these guys are magic. Do you like on the Appalachian Trail, do you take trail names?
Totally.
Yeah. So I don't know if I ever heard yours, and are you willing to admit what your trail name was?
I am. Yeah. It's kind of a funny story. My trail name was Rad. And a lot of people are like, oh, it's just because you said it a lot, but it's actually, I got a butt tattoo that says Rad.
Stop.
One of our water sources were these hot springs, and it ended up being this, there was kind of this, it's like a nudist place. Everyone was kind of naked there when we got there. And I was a little shocked. I was like, wow, this is kind of crazy. And Ike was, he got naked pretty fast. And he's trying to kind of convince me to do it. And he was like, oh, you're just scared to show off your Rad tattoo. And everyone started making fun of me. And from then on, I was called Rad.
That is awesome. We do not need to see a cutaway shot of the tattoo. We can picture it in our head, and that's enough. So what on earth does somebody eat on a, well, I know you get off the trail on occasion and you hopefully can get to a restaurant every 2 weeks or something, which might not be that easy to do, but what's your food of choice on a trail when you're out on the trail?
Yeah, it's pretty heinous. You're trying to be as light as possible. So take into consideration calorie to weight ratio. And some of the best thing, which I pretty much ate during the whole time I was there, was Knorr sides. It's these like made by Knorr soups, but they make these pasta and rice sides. They're awesome. Super high calories,
for the weight. And then you mix that, you have like one of those and then one Idahoan potatoes a night, and you're getting up over 1,000 calories, and that's pretty good. So dinner, we'd slam that. And then lunches, different variations of wraps and tortillas and peanut butter. And yeah, it's not the best, but really you're just trying to get as many calories in you as you can. Kind of what we say on trail is that you survive between towns. And then when you're in towns, it's, you just eat as many calories as you can. And that's really what sustains you. So you're just trying to get enough energy to push forward on trail. But then in towns is when you can kind of build up everything that you lost. So we go absolutely ham when we go into towns. I mean, we just lay siege to McDonald's and everything we go into.
Lay siege to McDonald's. I'm sure that they get used to it. They probably have through hikers at those particular McDonald's.
They do. That
just go nail it. It's really incredible what the human body is capable of when you add on top of that the incredible ingenuity and strength of the human mind. I mean, you just keep going and going. And throughout the film, you talk about, you know, overcoming different struggles and the ambiguity with reaching the end, because at the end, there's this void, I suppose, like who knows what comes after that. But isn't it really, it's amazing you walk in pain for days. And you said also that there were days that you guys were going 30 to 35 miles, which probably might have, you know, helped the injuries, but incredible the potential of the human body.
I totally agree. It really is. And I think you really start to see how the mental challenge slowly overshadows the physical challenge as you move further on in the trail. Because in the beginning, when you're starting, it's very difficult physically, but you still have this kind of almost like a honeymoon stage of the trail where you're entranced by everything around you. And the mountains are beautiful. And I mean, they maintain beautiful, but like, as you go on, your body adjusts. And as your body adjusts, you start cranking out these days. It just becomes a lifestyle. And that's when the mental challenge starts to take over. The monotony starts to kick in. And you have to wake up every day. And it's the same exact thing every day. And you watch some of these films, and it's really hard to portray how monotonous this is. Because you really, with filming this, we captured the highlights. But there are so many times where, you know, we'll be walking through just a green tunnel for weeks and there's no views, and you have to get in your mind and just start thinking of things. And that's when it gets dangerous, because you can think about everything. And I think I thought about everything I could possibly think about that summer. You know, you process your whole childhood 5 times and you're like, all right, I'm done with that. What can I think of? I'll think of this. And that's really, they say that that's kind of what kicks you in the end. Is a lot of people drop out because they just can't deal with the monotony and the mental challenge that comes with that. And so when you are preparing for it, you prepare physically, and you might be physically fit, but mentally you have to be strong enough, and your mental ability, once you lose it mentally, then physically you suffer, you know. And if you're not motivated and you don't have that goal, then you're not going to be able to crank out those miles. We also had to go pretty fast because we started super late. Yeah. And so we were kind of in the back of our minds, knew that winter was coming up in the Cascades, and we were pushing. Me coming from Africa, I had this like visceral fear of the snow. And so I was not, you know, super excited for this thought of like hiking a lot of Washington in the snow. And so that did motivate me. But I did surprise myself. I was very thankful that I was able to kind of fend off injuries, and thankful that I was able to do what I was able to do. It was a blessing. You know, I'm sure you can resonate with this, but the act of exercising your body, pushing your body to its limits, is it brings so much joy and happiness and self-discovery. And, you know, you come to this point where you realize you might not ever be as fit as you are right now. And so you just start challenging yourself to do things. And there was a point where I wanted to do a 24-hour challenge where I start at 8 a.m. and hike till 8 a.m. and see how far I can go. And you just start wanting to push your body more. And it's really incredible what you find out you can do.
Yeah, the 24-hour challenge, absolutely incredible. 8 in the morning, you went 80 miles and nailed it. Did you sleep for like 2 days, or what happens at the end of that 24-hour?
Yeah, I slept pretty long. I kind of waited for the rest of my trail family to catch up. And so I just posted up in my tent for a while. Thankfully, I made it to this place called Timberline Lodge at the base of Mount Hood. Mm-hmm. And so they had a huge buffet there, which was, I just slammed it. It was awesome. But yeah, you just kind of post up. It's fun.
That is so cool. So let me just ask you real quick about the video. Did somebody say this is really remarkable, let's do it, or did it grow on you and to do it yourself, and did you have help? I mean, there's beautiful music in it, wonderful music, great editing, well done. You know what? Give me a little mini kind of wrap up of how you got to the point of actually deciding to do it and to this point now where it's completed.
Well, I really appreciate you. It means a lot coming from you, Tom. I've been really inspired by your films and I've learned a lot from filmmaking. I think it's from just watching expeditions and watching documentaries. And I think as you can relate to, there's something very different about filming like a journey and a hiking mm-hmm. and a backpacking trip than just making a documentary where you have access to heavy gear and everything, where you're very concerned about weight and you're very concerned about what you're carrying. And I think we've become so accustomed to consuming media that we lose sight of what it takes to like film an actual adventure. You know, you don't have to only physically do it, but you have to force yourself to take your camera out and when everything in your body tells you to stop. And it's definitely a tricky process. And for me, that became almost a coping mechanism to fight the monotony, because as you start capturing the world around you, then it becomes something very artistic. And as an artist myself, I really love just learning how to compose things and learning how to do this. And I'm still really green. I've really only made a couple of films, and it's, I would not consider myself a filmmaker, but it's something that I'm very passionate about. I love the stories that you're able to tell with film. And so, I didn't have any help with it. One of my good friends is a videographer that lives here in Chattanooga. I knew him from Covenant, and he helped me with some of the more technical parts of like getting the sounds that I used and getting kind of the editing figured out. I did it all myself. I mean, it took me 2 years. I was super slow. Just kind of working through it. I didn't really have like a lot of time to dedicate to it per se. So I just filled it into my schedule. Right after the Pacific Crest Trail, I went back out to Africa. Didn't have a lot of time to work on it then, kind of bits and pieces. So it's been a project, but it's been a creative outlet for me. I've learned a lot through the process, and it's definitely something where I'm excited to kind of push my limits and try to make a documentary for some future through hikes and such.
Well, that begs the question, what is on tap for you? What's your next great adventure and hopeful a film project along with it?
Yeah. Well, I at this point, everything is a little unknown because of COVID, but if things go as planned, then I keep saying next year, but it's this year now, which is crazy. I'm going to be trying to finish off my Triple Crown, which is hiking the three big trails in the States, the Pacific Crest Trail, Continental Divide Trail, and Appalachian Trail. So I'm going to try to do the Continental Divide Trail and the Appalachian Trail this season, which really, really excited for. So been training for that, running races, acquiring gear, spending way too much money, but starting to kind of all come together and getting pretty excited. So hopefully, unless the world shuts down again, I'm going to be giving that a shot come April.
That is awesome. Well, you have 144,000 views as of this night that I'm looking at it. So my gut is you could probably find some gear sponsors. I want to, before I ask you about your happiness quotient, I have to say, and I'm playing this for the listeners, the ending, you began the film with the ending, basically. So the very beginning, the first thing you see is the end. And then you go back to the beginning and get us to the end again, in essence. And I literally just recalling it, I've got goosebumps because you were so moved at the end, like, wow, this is it. This is, I'm actually at the end of this thing, and tears come to your eyes and you start to talk about overcoming struggles. What's on the other end? That this metaphor for your entire life. You summed it up so beautiful. What it's like a pilgrimage. Would you say, is it like this spiritual quest and you passed the test, I guess, and now it's on to the next one.
Yeah, man,
awesome question. I really appreciate you saying that. It was definitely a moving moment. I very intentionally used the word pilgrimage because I think a pilgrimage is it's a journey into an unknown or a foreign place for yourself personally, where the traveler is really searching for something, either like physically or even abstract. And then he comes away from the trip with a deeper understanding of themselves, their relationship with other people, their relationship with nature. And then they return to normal life, changed and hopefully a better man. So I kind of saw that as this, what I wanted to view the trip as. And when I think of a pilgrimage, it's very different than just a vacation or a trip or something. It's intentional and it's a journey and you're trying to come away with something. And so for me, it didn't really become clear to me that this was a pilgrimage until maybe halfway through, you know, even nearing the end of the trip, where you start realizing, holy crap, I'm a changed person. I'm starting to think of things differently. I'm starting to view life differently. I have a lot more confidence in myself and my abilities. And I don't get as stressed about things. You know, you start overcoming obstacles and you realize that somehow things just work out and you're pushing yourself to such great limits that you start restructuring in your mind what you can actually accomplish, both physically and mentally and emotionally. You know, any challenge in life, you have the willpower to overcome it. And I think at the end, all of that just came crashing in. And one thing that I wasn't really prepared for was how difficult it was going to be to say goodbye to this lifestyle, because it becomes a lifestyle. You're out there for so long that you kind of forget what life was like beforehand. And you don't really ever want to think about Canada. That's why I call it an abstract notion of Canada throughout the film, is because you don't want to really think about it, because it's almost like running a marathon. They say when you run a marathon, you think aid station to aid station. You don't think about the marathon as a whole. Otherwise, you might get psyched out and you're not going to be able to do it. So what you do is you think about it in stages and say, okay, I'm going to go 5 miles, and then I'm going to go 5 miles, and I'm going to go 5 miles. And that's what we were doing during the trip, is I'm going to make it to this town, this mountain, that ridge, that tree up there. I'm going to hobble there. Like sometimes it's just foot by step by step. And I think suddenly, but in the back of your mind, Canada is always there. This notion of like, I have this goal, I have something I'm working towards. And I think that is so important in life, not just in the trail, to have this end goal, you know, to have this perspective of something that we're pushing towards. And I think all of that just really came crashing around me at the end, where I realized, A, this trip was about to end. Canada is no longer an abstract notion. It's now a very tangible notion. And we're going to get there in 40 miles. Holy crap, this is all going to be over. Then after that, I don't have this concrete goal. Like suddenly I don't have something that I know every day when I wake up, I'm like, all right, I'm walking, I'm going to Canada, I'm doing this. Once you're done, you realize, all right, what's my next goal? You need those goals in life to push yourself forward. I think it's a big part of happiness and joy and determination in life, is having things that you're working towards. And that to me really came to light there at the end. So it was hard to describe, but it's this crashing in of emotions of like, I'm done. Holy crap. I got to say goodbye to these friends that I've formed blood relationships with. Like we have almost died by hypothermia together. We suffered in the desert together. Like, you know, I'm saying goodbye to them. I'm saying goodbye to the trail, to this beautiful lifestyle of just moving through these wonderful spaces. And then at the end of it, there's just immense joy and this realization of like, I'm a new person and I have much more confidence in myself and the abilities that I have. And I want to be a dreamer. I want to dream bigger. I want to pursue bigger things. And I think when you realize that in yourself, I feel like almost the second half of your life starts, you know?
Yeah. Well, so you might have just answered about my last question in terms of your happiness quotient, like how you find meaning in your life. And please elaborate if there's more, but you said to have a goal, to have something you're shooting for, gives some purpose, and it could be big. It doesn't have to be the PCT. It doesn't have to be 2,650 miles. It might be very small. It might be for a person who's trying to change their diet and just say, I'm not going to eat a half a pint of Ben and Jerry's at night, or 5 pints or whatever, you know, just having a goal. Would you say that that's one of the keys to, you know, meaning and happiness?
It's definitely an element. As a Christian, my happiness does come solely from God, but God has given us the gift of nature and adventure to deeper experience his creation and his character. And so I feel like for me, that happiness is derived from God, but it is lived out and it's experienced by the abilities that he's given us. He's made us each unique. Not everyone wants to do the things that I want to do in life, but he's given me a desire for adventure, to push myself, to push, you know, others that I'm with and to inspire. And for me, then that's where happiness comes from. When you start understanding who God has created you to be, and then you start living that out, then you really start to experience joy, because you're looking around and you're like, man, my body just did that. Thank you, God, for that body you've given me. Now I can come on top of this mountain and see this view. And that's kind of where I would say that's the key element. So there is this element of purpose. But as a Christian, my ultimate purpose is not necessarily in what I can do in this life. It's living a life for God. And that, to me, is the ultimate purpose. But within that, as a Christian, you do need determination. You know, we're not just puppets. We're not robots. We still have feelings. We still have sin. We still have emotions. And so we need to have these, you know, fabricated goals in life. Like, this is what I want to do. And I want to run this ultra marathon. And I want to hike this trail. I want to climb this mountain. I would love to summit Everest one day, son of a gun. Like, that's been a goal of mine for forever. And I think bucket list is such a, it's a term that a lot of people are throwing around, and it's almost lost its potency as a term. But I think I have a physical bucket list that I've written down. It's in a sacred space for me that I go to sometimes just to remind myself what I want to do in life. And when you hit something on your bucket list, I think there's just no greater joy. It's really, really a beautiful moment. Mm.
That is so perfect. I didn't expect that answer, and I love that. It's beautiful, and what you're doing in pursuing that which is in you, that core belief, is inspiring others and giving other people hope and the ability to maybe put one foot in front of the other when, you know, previously they might not have. And that's a real gift. And so you are in school right now. Are you in a divinity school right now?
Yeah, I'm in seminary. I go to Fuller Theological Seminary.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Wow, man. And so what are you going to do? Like, are you going to be a congregation? Are you going to go back to Africa? Or who knows? You don't know what the plan is. You're just getting ready for it.
Yeah, I spent a year, about a year in Kenya and Tanzania after I got back from the PCT. And that really changed my perspective on things and showed me what I needed to learn theologically. So I'm right now learning a lot more, just how to break apart the Bible, study it, and exposit scripture. And then the goal is to move back out to Africa, continue doing mission work. That's where my home is. That's where my heart is. So my goal right now is to just milk as much out of America as I can, because I'm so stoked on this country right now and the beauty here. And I just really want to do as much as I can while I'm in America, because when I go back to Africa, I really want to start investing and kind of put down some serious roots. And I think it's an interesting thing when you have these dreams and these elements on your bucket list that are unfulfilled. It's sometimes hard to be present. So we don't all have the ability and the capacity to tick off our bucket list items. But I think if you can, then freaking do it. Like, just go for it, you know, because it's so incredible. And it really gives you a sense of satisfaction in life and just a happiness that you can share with other people. And so for me right now, I want to try to tick off those bucket list items and then tick off another bucket list, which is move back to Africa.
So rad. No doubt. Well, Chris, dude, thank you. Keep on training. I'm inspired. I'm not in great shape right now. And I've been somebody's bugging me to be a little bit more persistent with training. I did a hike a week ago and felt great, just off the couch, feel good. But I'm psyched, because I need to, it might be many months away, but I'm going to be ready for you, dude.
At least
eat the dirt, the dust flying off your heels.
You're hilarious. Well, I've seen what you can do, Tom. I have no doubt you'll be able to crush it.
No doubt. Yeah, that's right. I'll see if I can while you're not looking, I'll put some big lead weight in your pack and then go speeding up ahead.
I love that.
We're on the final mile, Pacific Crest Trail. Final mile, a 2,650-mile journey across America, through California, Oregon, and Washington. Some of the most beautiful and stunning terrain this world has to offer. And it's about to all end here, with one step across the Canadian border. I told myself I wouldn't cry, especially on camera.
In Rebecca Solnit's 2000 masterpiece called Wanderlust, A History of Walking, she says, quote, "Where does it start? Muscles tense, one leg a pillar holding the body upright between the earth and sky, the other a pendulum swinging from behind. Heel touches down. The whole weight of the body rolls forward onto the ball of the foot. The big toe pushes off, and the delicately balanced weight of the body shifts again. The legs reverse position. It starts with a step, and then another, that add up like taps on a drum to a rhythm, the rhythm of walking, the most obvious and obscure thing in the world, this walking that wanders so readily into religion, philosophy, landscape, urban policy, anatomy, allegory, and heartbreak." Chris Carter's personal journal documentary, To Measure a Mile, a Pacific Crest Trail documentary, is so beautifully done, absolutely engaging, not only with the words that he speaks, but the visual images, so beautifully filmed and captured. Really, a truly phenomenal effort for someone who's never done a film before. In the liner notes to this episode, I'll provide a link so you too can watch To Measure a Mile. And to show you just a little bit about how popular this film is, in the 1 week that's gone by since I first watched it, over 14,000 more people have actually watched it. Now it's up to about 58,000 views. What's it going to be in a week, a year? How many people are becoming inspired and motivated by the beautiful words and footage of Chris Carter of Chattanooga, Tennessee, by way of Kenya, Africa? Chris, wish you all the best in your upcoming journey of the Appalachian Trail and the Continental Divide Trail. If you'd like a free downloadable PDF of The Happiness Quotient, A Course in Happiness, visit me at patreon.com/thehappinessquotient, where you'll see a PDF lesson to download. And for more information about me, inquire about personal coaching or public speaking in person or online, visit me at eyesopenproductions.com. And while you're at it, sign up for my newsletter.
Happiness Jones.
Please share this episode with anyone and everyone that might find these words inspiring. I rely on the kindness of my listeners to share and distribute the episodes. This is to inspire people, to get people off their chair, going after their dreams. Remember, something bright always awaits us. Set one's mind straight with good intent. And even though the search can be dark and deep, something bright does await us, even in the tragedy that is life. Thank you to the Wood Brothers for the use of their song, Happiness Jones. And thank you for visiting The Happiness Quotient. I will see you all real soon. If you're still here, please, I would love it if you checked out my Patreon page. It's patreon.com/Everest Mystery and my YouTube channel, Everest Mystery. Check me out. And as always, leave comments and share your thoughts whenever you can, and share it with friends who might be interested in hearing or listening or watching. Thanks so much.